is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Well, welcome to Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Three big stories on the show today. Uranium One, it's got everybody paying attention to what's really happening. Tax reform or tax cuts, depending on how you look at it. This is another one. Congress is moving forward quickly to get to the president's desk. Can they do it before the end of the year? Some are saying Thanksgiving even. And finally, what about Trumpism, the Trump strategy overall? You see Senator Bob Corker, Senator Jeff Flake, and Senator John McCain had some pretty strong words for the president in the past many days. Even the ex-president George W. Bush came out and said some pretty interesting things. We'll tap into that story as well. Wow, this is a scandal that I think a lot of people did not see was going to turn this quickly. Interesting story here. Joining us on the top of the show here is Colonel Jim Warshuk is with us today, and also IQ Al Razzulli joins us. Did Comey's FBI use this phony Trump dossier with alleged Russian ties to the president's campaign associates to convince a judge to grant them the FISA warrant, as some are saying, all right, and allow them to secretly monitor the Trump campaign? Colonel Warshuk, let's start here, and tell me what you know and what you think happened here, how this thing got going.
Well, certainly, this is all connected in a number of ways, and starting with your premise, Malcolm, that did this give or lead to the FBI and the intelligence community to seek the warrants? Well, let's go back first to the dossier itself. The dossier was written to provide a narrative, a false one at that, about candidate Donald Trump. From there, they needed a way to validate the material that was in that article, which was completely salacious and unfounded, as you mentioned earlier. And in order to do that, they needed to get the U.S. intelligence community involved to make it look like it was a legitimate effort. And so from there, the FISA warrants were sought. Later, because the information was there, the Obama administration expanded the rules for unmasking names, which happened about 15, 20 days before the inauguration. And so you had a expanded capability to rapidly reveal information and names, which was all part of the effort here to be able to do this. So from that standpoint, certainly when you look back, if you walk the information back, it certainly suggests, if not indicates pretty solidly, that that was the case.
Yeah. IQ, how deep do you think this scandal goes? When you think about, you know, Comey's FBI, you think about the CIA, you think about all the players in the agencies, the State Department that would have been involved in this. How deep do you, I mean, this is a pretty massive scandal, I think we're seeing it. And we're only at the very, very tip of the iceberg here. I mean, we haven't even really, you know, seen all the evidence yet, or the pieces are still forthcoming. How far and deep and wide do you think this thing goes, IQ?
It reveals for me, and at least for myself, that the deep state is not a conspiracy theory. The deep state is an entrenched number of people, maybe in the tens of thousands, who have remained on taxpayers' money for decades. And they are so entrenched, it is almost impossible to remove them. And they are, in general, so-called liberal leftists. That's why they were colluded, all of them colluded, by the way, to try to destroy Trump.
Well, you know, you mentioned the deep state. I have to tell you, level with you both, you kind of seen this happening from the beginning when you see Trump come into office and come into power. And there were a lot of people, as it typically is with a new presidency, left from the previous administration. And And a lot of these players had deep hatred for Donald Trump. They did not want him in the White House. And you started to see some of the early signs of that. Before the president even got going, he was sort of cut at the knees. I think that's an important piece to this thing, Colonel. When IQ talks about the deep state, a lot of people hear those words. It brings up a good point, he does, because they automatically think, oh, they're talking conspiracy here. But how much truth is there to what IQ Al-Razouli is saying about this deep state, do you think, Colonel?
Well, I couldn't agree with Al more on that. He's exactly right. The deep state played a critical role in this because it provided both the mechanism and the personnel within government, particularly at higher levels below the senior officer levels, to be able to do this and do it without any pushback from what would be your loyal rank and file government employees, intelligence officers, who would normally, when you see something like that happen, automatically become whistleblowers because they're patriots and they follow the law rather than the political whims of who is ever in office. And so he is exactly right on that. And the expanded part of this, which, as you alluded to, this is only the tip of the iceberg, is how vast this spread, and you know, we'll be talking about this for weeks and months ahead. It's not just Fusion GPS, but this has tentacles into many other areas, and I would go so far as saying the Iran nuclear deal, into the Clinton Foundation and how they got money from other countries. I mean, this is pretty vast.
Yeah. Well, let's dive more into this Uranium One deal here, that people hear uranium and, you know, there's one big thing that uranium is used for. So I remember a lot of big eyes were opening pretty wide when they see that we approximately sold, what, 20-25%, the numbers that I'm hearing, of uranium to the Russians, which in itself on the surface is a real game changer. IQ, when you hear about this uranium deal and you come back to Mueller, Robert Mueller at that time, I mean, he was up in the FBI, and Rosenstein, I mean, they approved the uranium deal under the Obama administration. So I want to ask you, how do all the pieces fit together? When you take a look at the State Department, the Department of Energy, the Department of Interior, all the various components here, and the CIA and the FBI, it looks to me like there are a lot of players here, and wouldn't they have had to know about a deal like this, about a deal when it comes to uranium and the sale of uranium to a foreign entity such as Russia? I think a lot of people are thinking a lot of heads are going to roll in Washington.
I hope a lot of heads will roll. There is no question that there was collusion. And I'm not talking about a small number of people. This is immense. There's no question about it. Because it covers not only the State Department. By the way, the State Department is the worst group who are anti-Trump, the State Department. And they could have initiated all these things with the CIA, with the FBI. After all, the people who were running the State Department are the top echelons of the government, Hillary Clinton and President Obama. It is immense. The collusion is there. There is treason. From my perspective anyway, this is treason. To sell 20% of one of the most important military assets to your enemy is treason. I can't put it in any other way.
Well, those are big words, treason. Let's touch on that back a moment. Colonel, I haven't had a chance to really interact with you on this point, but I want to say, I'm going to take a step here and say, I don't think, I can't recall a scandal of this magnitude. Certainly I haven't seen it in my lifetime. I'm not so sure we've ever seen a scandal of this magnitude in our country's history. I mean, we're talking about the gravity of this situation. This is significant. We've never seen it. I mean, we're talking about a web here of players that would have had to know about all of this. What reports are you hearing from your connections and relationships? How deep does this go, Colonel?
It goes significantly both, like I said, both deep and widespread. Just to give you a little perspective, when you're dealing with uranium and you're selling uranium, as we saw came about in this situation, you're talking about between 9 and 14 federal agencies. These are cabinet level and just below cabinet level agencies, like the FBI and CIA, in addition to the State Department, the Department of Energy, the Department of Commerce. There are a lot of key players sitting around the table whose agencies would have to have signed off on this. And I think when you look at the magnitude, you know, this is probably something, the closest we could get is back in the 50s, the Rosenbergs. So this is pretty significant. The concern and the things that I'm seeing now are, at some point in time, there had to be a point where the president was aware of this. When you're transferring or selling or moving 20 to 25% of the U.S. uranium stockpile to a country like Russia, that is just astronomically significant in that perspective. So I think as we come along with this in this investigation, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to get really scared. And the most significant piece that I saw yesterday that came out was a member of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, Democrat, basically tried to put in play a cover-up to protect the White House, meaning he is obviously well aware that this gets pretty close to Obama, and he tried to initiate an effort to make sure that didn't happen. So that in itself really lays it out to where and how significant this is.
Well, you can start to see the response from the other side. Some of them look like actually deer in headlights when the camera lights go on. And you're right. You can sort of feel that. Listen, it's safe to say, I think you both would agree that it's obviously there's going to have to be a special prosecutor many times over on this one, right?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, I don't see how you get away with not having that. So, all right, so the president came out. He said the allegations of Russia collusion with his campaign have boomeranged and are hurting Democrats. He went on to tell reporters the whole Russia thing, this was the Democrats coming up with an excuse for losing the election. He said they lost it, and they lost it very badly, and they didn't know what to say, so they made up the whole Russia hoax. Now, there may be some truth to that, gentlemen, but I want to say this. I can't believe in my wildest imagination that God-loving, fearing Americans and quasi maybe patriots and people who serve this country in various capacities, I cannot imagine that they would sell this country out from the levels of this sort of a scandal back to the Uranium One deal and what has happened and taken place there. By the way, which that report and that dossier was paid millions and millions and millions of dollars from the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and the Clinton campaign. We're talking, their hands are so far in the cookie jar, you can't see the other side of that thing. So it's hard to imagine, though, when the president comes out and says that, what I'm trying to drive at here is how do people like this in high office, I still don't connect the dots to understand the motive here. I can't believe it's just because they lost an election. I don't entirely buy that. There's got to be more to it. IQ, is there more to it, or is it as simple as that?
No, it's not simple. You're absolutely right. The corruption has been going on for centuries, for decades. Right. The colonel mentioned the Rosenbergs. The Rosenbergs were two people. A man and his wife. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you have a complete cabal of different agencies. All of them are Democrat, brown shirt, left-wingers. All of them. I don't miss my words. I don't have to. This is treason. By any standard of logic, treason. And what Obama did in excess of this one with the Iranians is even greater treason. But
IQ is exactly right. There is certainly the element of conspiracy, and from the standpoint in intentional and deliberate conspiracy. And I would ask everyone to think back. One of the other scandals that has still yet to evolve and be determined, and maybe this will open that back up again, is the Hillary emails and the 33,000 emails that were missing and destroyed. How much information is in those emails that relate to this? She went through unbelievable efforts to make those disappear in whatever way she could for some reason. And this sheds light almost immediately back on that. That alone is part of that. And as I said previously, you know, this extends into the Iran deal. This extends into the Clinton Foundation. It extends into a lot of areas. So certainly a special prosecutor, special counsel will have to look into those if the House and Senate committees that are now gearing up to look at that. And here's the other interesting thing, Malcolm, that's happened here, what this is doing. A number of members of Congress, some who were on the fence for Trump and others who were fairly loyal, they're digging their heels in to now move forward with this. Congressmen like Jim Jordan and Ron DeSantis and many others, they're realizing that the gig is up, so to speak, and they want to be on the right side now. Otherwise, they're going to be seen as part of the problem. So I think there's somewhat of a silver lining in this, and maybe this will help move members of Congress to support Trump now that they realize the game is over. You know, the old guard, the establishment circles are being eroded.
Malcolm, and as an outsider looking in for the last, 9 months with Trump, or 10 months, what's happened? Whatever Donald Trump said, and they said he was stupid and an idiot and exaggerating, every single item he has said turned out to be true. Literally, every single accusation he made turned out to be true.
Amazing. Which was part of the impetus as to why he ran for office to begin with. You cannot lose sight, and you have to remember that the whole thing that comes to my mind is when you talk about draining the swamp, and we're talking about a story such as we're talking about right now, this is like the swamp on steroids. I mean, we've never seen a swamp as deep and murky as this one. So it does not, I do not get lost in the fact that this whole campaign and this whole victory of a very much a businessman who really had no business running for that office, according to the politicians, and he kind of, you know, he ate their breakfast, he ate their lunch, he ate their dinner. Right out of the gate, who is this guy? They didn't like him. And his message that he's going to drain the swamp, boy, that has a new meaning today, I have to tell you. When you look at this Uranium One deal and you look at how far and how wide this deal goes and the agencies that have the potential to be impacted by this, I have to tell you, I hope they have a lot of orange suits ready for some of these people, because this is massive. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, where exactly this goes from here. We've never seen anything to the likes of what we're seeing. And I think this is the rallying call right now for people to stand up and say, okay, what's going on here? Whether you're a Democrat or Republican and independent, it doesn't really matter. There's so much at stake within the union right now. This is, I think, we're on the verge right now, gentlemen, of a game changer. This is a game changer. The silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more.
news blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Tax cuts were a big part of the Trump campaign promise to middle-class voters. Yet the arguments we hear from some in the halls of Congress are that they only favor the rich. We've heard that argument before. Well, Republicans say not so fast. They favor the middle class, they say, these tax cuts. Well, economist Harry Dent is here, so let's ask him. Harry, rich or middle class, who's the beneficiaries of these tax cuts?
Okay, the secret is in the corporate tax cuts, which favor the rich. You know, high net worth individuals own businesses like me. Corporate executives are, you know, benefit from tax cuts in large corporations. So that's where the secret is. They're saying, yeah, we're gonna lean the tax cuts towards the middle class. But here's the first insight, and this has always been the case. Middle class people and lower class people and more don't pay much taxes. The biggest taxes they pay are Social Security, and that goes to their benefit in the long term. So there's only so much you can do to benefit the middle class. So that's the problem, is that the corporate taxes will benefit the higher income people, no question about it, when this all comes out. There's only so much you can do for the middle class.
So you're saying, in reality here, there's a fair argument with the fact that the Democrats have a point that this tax plan, this cut, is going to benefit the very wealthy.
Yes, it will in the end. Again, mostly through the corporate tax cuts, mm-hmm. Not through the income tax cuts to the everyday person. Okay. and individuals.
Right, let me throw this scenario out at you, something very interesting. I haven't heard this before, but let's get your opinion on this. So, all right, so when Trump came into this thing, he wanted this bill. You remember now, he wanted to close the loopholes, right? He wanted initially...
Yeah, that's good. That's right. The good thing.
Right.
Close loopholes.
He wanted to close the loopholes. He wanted, remember, initially a 15% corporate tax rate, which would be a hell of a drop from where it was initially, okay, which would even be more fear with what you're saying and really, benefit the very wealthy. But let's keep going. He wanted a three-bracket structure, as Trump initially called for it. Now, what if all that happened? Now, Trump is famous for his deal-making. He wrote The Art of the Deal. This is his big gift, he says. So what if the top tier was left at 39% if you're over 500,000? So these are, in fact, the Warren Buffetts of the world and many others. What if he used that leverage to buy a compromise showing that the wealthy are going to stay at that level, yet you modify the entire tax plan otherwise? What about that?
Okay. The middle class doesn't pay much taxes outside of Social Security. So you got to get that first. There's mm-hmm. only so okay. much you can save them in taxes. Yes, they should keep that top bracket higher, which will impact people like me. And I don't complain about that. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing about tax reform to me is simplify the tax code. I do like that part of what they're talking about. get rid of deductions. And I hate to say it, state and local income taxes. I would take out the mortgage deduction. I'm sorry. I would take that out. I would take out charitable deductions. Those are two things I benefit from. But simplify it so people don't have to keep so complicated records and pay so much to accountants. And so the tax code is simpler. I think simplify is the big deal. Yes, benefit the middle class as much as you can, but how much can you do? They don't pay much taxes. They just don't. Right. You're willing to say, oh, we're not going to make the middle class pay their Social Security contributions. Well, that would be a big deal, but Social Security is already bankrupt for decades ahead. So that would be stupid.
All right, but let me ask you this. You talk about, and I've heard this argument before about the mortgage tax there and the benefit there and the charity as well, you just say. Now, I know a lot of people who absolutely use those incentives. The reason they give more to charity or the reason they will purchase that house is because of the tax benefits. So by taking that away, aren't we in really short lowering the possibilities that we're going to sell more houses, it's going to affect real estate, and less people are going to give charitable-wise? Or am I onto anything?
No, you're not onto anything there. I hate to say it, Malcolm. Look, the natural systems work well. Our body knows how to heal itself without a bunch of extra stuff. Okay. And doctors want to prevent colds. Colds keep you healthy. Mm-hmm. Recessions keep the economy healthy. Economists don't understand this. And getting people to give more money to charities when they wouldn't otherwise or buy a house when they wouldn't otherwise is perverting our economy. I would give money. I'm getting ready to give a bunch of money to Puerto Rico because I moved down there and they're in deep trouble. And yes, it helps if there's a tax deduction, but I would do it anyway. And I tell you, if I had to keep any deduction, it would be the charitable, because charitable deductions are doing things like governments would tend to do. Governments tend to counterbalance things in the economy. But giving people an incentive to borrow more money to buy houses or commercial real estate, that's perverting the economy.
So you're not saying that that's going to make a change. Interesting. I don't know that
No. It helps the economy, but it overexpands. Here's my thesis, real quickly, and it's very simple. We have overexpanded our economy in the greatest bubble boom in history from 1983 to present because interest rates have always been pushed lower by the governments, and everybody's pushed everybody to borrow and spend and overexpand. We're in overexpansion mode. You don't need tax deductions and stimulus when you're in overexpansion and oversupply. When Reagan came into office in late 1980, early 1981, we were in a supply crisis. And how do you know that? Because you have inflation, massive inflation. We needed expansion. We needed to invest in the future. We needed to reduce regulations. That's what you do in a supply crisis. We are in a demand crisis. We got excess supply versus insufficient demand. That's these policies. If anybody thinks we're going to reduce taxes and companies are going to turn around and expand their supply and expand their workforces and expand their plants, they are delusional. Donald Trump, I will make this prediction today and hold on to it for the rest of my life. He will never, ever, ever, ever create 4% growth again. I don't care if he puts taxes to zero, because we don't need it. And the workforce growth is almost zero for as far as I can see. You can't grow with 0.5% productivity and zero workforce growth. I don't care what you do.
Well,
we
touch
don't
on
need
that a
more
moment.
Supply.
Let's touch on what you just talked about a moment, because I was going to ask you that. We just recorded this, in fact, was news just coming on here with you today here. We just had a 3% GDP growth for the second quarter in a row. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Nobody predicted this except Trump, really. Let's call it what I've seen. Now, so let me ask you this straight out. What do you think the next quarter GDP growth will be? You're saying we can't reach 4%.
Right. Cannot. Well, I can't. What I'm saying is, definitively, without a doubt, we cannot create 3-4% sustainable growth again. So, can you get it for a quarter or two after underperforming? Yes. Can with people thinking, oh my God, we're going to get this tax benefit. You mean we're going to get another free lunch? We've had free money for 9 years now. Now we're going to get tax cuts. How long can an economy grow on something for nothing? Does anybody in this audience think that something for nothing works? So, have you ever got something for nothing in your life?
Well, not without a big price tag with it. But so you're saying these two quarters right now are the exception and they're not going to be sustained. There's no way.
Yes. I'll tell you another reason. Right. You know, I look at demographics and the baby boom peaked in their spending, which we predicted 20 years before it happened in late 2007. Ever since, it's taken endless stimulus, cocaine, whatever you want to call it, to keep the economy at an anemic 1.8 to 2% growth rate. And what happened is the Generation X, on their way down in spending, had a two-year spending surge from 2016 to 2017. Well, that's going to turn down again, and we're going to see stronger demographic pressures ahead. We've got greater debt than ever, especially in the emerging world. Everything that caused the economy to crash in 2008 is still in force, greater than ever, and the fundamental trends are going to get worse than ever. All of this, you know, quantitative easing around the world, all of this, oh, now we're going to cut taxes, and then we're going to send, and, you know, the ultimate thing is they keep saying, at some point, the Federal Reserve is going to send you a $20,000 check in the mail. This is BS. I hate to say it, Malcolm. Right, it's just BS. You can't run economy on nothing.
And we've been doing that clearly. Listen, before we talk about cyclical crashes, the bubble theory, and also you've got a new book coming out, and I want to touch on that in just a moment. Before we do, I want to talk to you and ask you about this, all the money overseas that you continue to hear that on the talking points. And straight out question, do you think companies that when they come back to the USA, will they come back here if the corporate tax rate is lowered? Is that the incentive to bring those trillions of dollars back? And how will they invest that money? Because Washington is counting on them to invest that money. And what will they invest that money in, Harry? Yeah.
They will invest it in their own pockets and dividends and buybacks. The same thing they've done with free money from the Fed for 9 years. They bought back their own stocks. They've done mergers and acquisitions. Right. They have not expanded jobs that much or plant capacity or anything else. They are overseas because of lower wages. Right. That's why they're there.
So
they make higher profits. And if they can repatriate money back with less taxes, they'll bring it back. Guess what? They'll send dividends to the rich and make the rich richer, and the middle class will not see a cent.
All right, so let me ask you this. So what if there was a requirement there, Harry, that required them to bring the money back to invest it in brick and mortar and human resources and not stocks, bonds, investments? How does that work?
It would make the present situation even worse. Companies today, corporations are operating at only 70% of capacity. Normal is 80 to 90%. So they have excess capacity already. If you look at China, the second largest economy in the world and the fastest growing until India recently, they have more excess capacity than we do in everything. We don't need more capacity. We don't need more brick and mortar. Even the demand that says we need better infrastructures, yes, in some cases, but it's overstretched. We don't need investment. We need to get more efficient, and we need to retarget our resources to an aging population rather than an expanding one. And so this does not solve the problem. If this money comes back, I'm telling you, if it does come back to the United States, these companies are going to end up paying higher dividends and stuff or buying back their stocks like they've done with free money forever. So this, again, this is the wrong answer to the wrong solution.
Harry, in the last couple of moments, let me get to a real big point here. First off, you have a new book coming out November 14th called Zero Hour: Turn the Greatest Political and Financial Upheaval in Modern History to Your Advantage. Now, this book, in previous conversations I've had with you, you've talked about the cyclical nature of these crashes. And I want to ask you right now, I want folks to be educated on what we're speaking about. Talk to us quickly now, briefly, these cyclical crashes, the necessary behavior of markets. Why are they a necessary behavior of markets? And are we incapable of avoiding them, Harry?
No, that is the whole delusion of central banks and governments and economists that we can, you know, generate an economy that never has recessions. It's like saying I can never have a cold again. I need to have a cold, you know, now and then. So that's the delusion. And the more that governments fight these natural cycles, and I'm telling you, in this book, Malcolm, mm-hmm. we look at every important mm-hmm. cycle that you'll ever need to know in your life to worry about or take profit in the future, because Andy and I, my co-author, have spent our whole life studying cycles, and there's three major cycles in addition to the ones I pointed in my past books that say we're going to see the biggest political revolution since democracy itself. This is a big deal happening. It's going to take a long time to turn around. This backlash against globalization, which frankly Trump and Brexit and other people are leading, is just the bare beginning of something that could take decades to restructure our entire political and religious cultures around the world. This is a big deal.
So your prediction is that this bubble is going to burst, and there's no way to change that. And so, you know, one of the things I was going to say to you is that shouldn't we do something? I mean, a lot of people are going to get hurt here by what we're talking about here, what you put out in the book here. And if this all plays out the way you're saying, and it is destiny that the bubble is so big, this is a lot of damage, I think you pointed out, that's been done over the decades now. And there's a price to pay for that decade. So you're saying there's no way to stop that from bursting, Harry. It's going to happen.
Right. There's no way. There's never been a bubble in history mm-hmm. that had a soft landing.
Okay,
and, and in addition to that, Malcolm, when stocks burst, like the Chinese bubble in late 2015, the second bubble there to burst, most of the damage will come in the first 2.5 to 3 months. 40% to 45% in 2.5 to 3 months is typical of a crash that may take 2 to 3 years to go down 80% to 90% in most bubbles.
And when does
most
this happen?
Most of it will happen right away.
When does this happen, approximately?
Well, I think we're topping between late October and January, and then the first crash will be somewhere between there and the next few months. I can never tell exactly when a bubble's mm-hmm. going to burst, but this one's getting very steep.
But there are, but there's no factors that we can really do to stop that off. That's it.
Because governments have already done everything they can do. They've already overstimulated. It's like, you know, you take too much cocaine or heroin, you take more and more and more, and there's some point where the body just collapses, and then you either die or you go into
so we are at the moment of being overdosed is what's happened, and we're
that's
in the,
why we call this book zero hour.
Yeah,
close to that point where
All right. There,
no more debt will keep us going. There's no more heroin that can keep us going.
Okay.
The economy will go down from its own extremes.
All right, let me tell folks now, harrydent.com, and I want to tell you quickly as well, he's got a newsletter out, Economy and Markets, which is free to you. Economy and Markets, it's a free newsletter. Just go to harrydent.com. You'll see that there. The book is out November 14th, Zero Hour, Turn the Greatest Political and Financial Upheaval in Modern History to Your Advantage. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Somehow, this man who rose to power and came into the presidency of the United States, let's face it, he is a little different. He's not the norm. He's not a typical politician by any stretch. This is a different kind of character, obviously. Not something the country has seen before. But then again, we're in uncharted waters, and these are unprecedented times, no doubt. So the country decided to put somebody, a businessman, virtually unknown in political circles, Donald Trump, rose to the White House and now occupies the Oval Office. Let's talk about this Trumpism. We're going to do that today with George McClellan joins us. He's one of our experts on America Out Loud, and Colonel Jim Warshuk is here as well, and he's another expert on America Out Loud, and Dr. Bev Beverly Jackson, she hosts a show, Emotions Are Us. She's a psychotherapist and a... actually, I want to just mention to you with Dr. Bev, she comes from a Democrat family, by far and large, but registered as a Republican. And that kind of happened just right around the Reagan years, or just after. We talked about that the other day. So yeah, this should be an interesting conversation here. So this past week here, you see a lot of the fallout happening with Senator Bob Corker, Senator Jeff Flake, and of course, Senator John McCain. He's been on the bad boy list for a while now with Donald Trump. They have not seen eye to eye, but there are some reasons why that is the case. The president came out and said some things about his service that a lot of people were aghast about. But then again, this is a president that is not politically correct, George. This is a president who does not hesitate to say whatever is on his mind. He doesn't really care if you like it or you don't like it, but he's going to say it anyways. So much that the ex-president George W. Bush came out the other day, a president who never said anything about Barack Obama in the White House, came out and had some pretty scathing words to say without calling the administration by name, but clearly you knew who he was talking about. So George McClellan, let's start there. We see all of these players, you know, some of them are called establishment players, or, you know, you might refer to them as part of the swamp. Other people maybe don't think that way, but from an outside glance, it seems like he's doing what Ronald Reagan always talked against, which is eating his own, which is a Republican. Never talk bad about another Republican. Well, I think Trump has kind of broken that rule, yeah?
Well, that's true. And that would apply if the other side were actually Americans in political thinking. We've seen it all the time, that the Democrat Party has veered quite opposite direction from democracy and into the socialist Marxist sphere of their thinking, and they're not going to move from it. So he has an enemy. But as far as Trump is concerned, I just want to say that Trump is an open book. He's not an unknown. And if anybody had ever read his book in 1987, The Art of the Deal, and paid any attention to it, they could anticipate Donald Trump.
That's a great point, George. I want to come back to that Art of the Deal, because you bring up a very valid point. I want to go to Dr. Bev first now. Dr. Bev, you hear George McClellan suggest that, well, the Democrat philosophy and the party itself has gone so far to the left, like way over there, like almost socialist tendencies and Marxist. Talk to me on that. You can probably speak about both parties equally because of your upbringing. Do you sense there's truth to that, or do you have a different opinion?
I sense that there is some truth to that. However, my opinion is, first I want to make a remark about number 45. I expected him to do what he is doing. He is out of the box. He's out of the circle. No one can contain him. He does what he does. He says what he says. However, that does change rapidly. And it's Friday. And we always know on Friday with the club, with number 45, we're going to have a cliffhanger. And we have had a cliffhanger of a week.
Well, Dr. Bev, I got to mention, you know, late Friday used to be a slow news day. No more.
Never again. And as for the Democrats, all I hear is crickets. I'm not hearing any action. I don't see any action. I'm crickets, no noise. That's my
opinion. Well, it's well said.
Yeah. Well, but you know, you say that, Dr. Bibb, but yet, and I know you voted for Donald Trump, I believe, maybe you'll confirm that, but you're not real happy with the president as a whole, are you?
I wouldn't say that. Oh. I would say that Okay. I am grateful for Donald for number 45.
Wow.
Because he is showing the world the underbelly of America. We have always called this a melting pot. Hmm. Well, he's shown us what the pot has melted into. And without Donald Trump, I don't know if it would have ever happened.
No, it would not.
Donald, go for it.
I did not expect or anticipate that opinion from you, but delighted to have it just the same. Let's go to Colonel Warshak here a moment here. So, Colonel Warshak, you hear, you know, Dr. Bibb refers to it as the sound of crickets. Of course, George says more of a Marxist call there. You're probably not far removed from some of that thinking. Isn't a lot of that the reason why Donald Trump rose to power in the first place?
Well, that's exactly right, and I couldn't agree more with Dr. Bibb and with George. Both provided some really keen insight to how Donald Trump thinks and how he conducts himself. And you know, it's really interesting about the slow Friday news day. That was always reserved for the Democrats to dump the things they didn't want out there to be able to say we were transparent about it. And of course, we're seeing what we're seeing now, where it is quite an active news day. I think the real thing, or the other real thing about Donald Trump, when we talk to the events in recent days and weeks with regard to various members of Congress, Corker and Jeff Flake and others, is the thing about Donald Trump. He's all about America. He's very patriotic. He's very loyal. And loyal is a key word. And Donald Trump uses loyalty as a leverage. If you're loyal to him, you can do no wrong. You can disagree with him, but you got to be loyal to him on behalf of America, because this is all about America. Donald Trump will give you all the rope in the world you need to hang yourself, and he'll allow you to do that. And I think that's what we're seeing playing out in many, many cases. Donald Trump is not going after people. He's just allowing them to reveal who they really are, particularly when we're dealing with and talking about establishment Republicans, rhinos, the far left. Wherever you fall in there, he expects you to be loyal to America first, and if not, then he will allow you to go down that road till you can't go any further.
Yeah, it's a valid point. He seems to be exposing all kinds of people on all different sides here. And Dr. Bibb said something interesting that got me. I've not heard it put that way. When she talked about, I've never heard this, but I find it fascinating, the term that she put out there by calling it the underbelly of America. Wow. That's fascinating, George. That gets me to stop and think a moment. I've never heard it phrased that way. But it gives me great pause, because she's right. We typically haven't seen or exposed the underbelly of America. Now, here's this guy who's in his 70s, who has made all kinds of money. He didn't get into office for money. He's not there for the money or the fame. He already had fame. He had fame already. He's on television. He's doing all this stuff. So what did he get in there for?
Well, do you realize... do you remember 25 years ago when he was interviewed on the Oprah Winfrey show? Mm-hmm. Did I say that right? She asked him if he was going to run for president. And he said, no, he's having too much fun. He says, but he would consider it if he thought America needed him and it was in trouble. Well, 25 years later, we're there. He's having fun. Do you realize he's having fun? He does not need money. Money was never a big motivation for him, he said, except as a way to keep score. The real excitement is playing the game. He's playing the game. He's in it for that, and he wants to save America.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a very valid point, George. Let's talk about that book, The Art of the Deal. George, you read the book. Jim, did you read the book? And Dr. Bibb, you both read the book or not?
I've read it.
I've read the book, yes.
You have, okay.
And he is quite the fan of The Art of the Deal. And he is a deal maker. And again, I may not, I don't always agree with him, but what I do see is that that underbelly, that emotional side of politics, what's really, really going on, what are people really thinking about. More than that, who the people really are that we've elected. The art of the deal, he's got it. He's making them show their hand, and he's pushing those buttons to make sure we see exactly who they are and we see exactly who number 45 is.
So what you're saying here is, and I think everybody is sort of agreeing with, back to this art of the deal, and that all of these episodes, it really is like a moving soap opera, let's face it. Of course, Washington was always that way, quite frankly. But when you look at all of these moving pieces, and you look at sometimes episode after episode where he does some of the most outlandish things, and some of the things where you scratch your head and you almost think, Colonel, you say to yourself, what the hell, did he just say that? I mean, you almost can't believe it. And then you go back and you read the transcript again, and sure enough, he sure the hell said that. I mean, this is part of the unusualness of this politician, or this businessman turned politician, if you will. But in order to really understand, as George said, Jim, you have to really look at that book, The Art of the Deal. I think what's fascinating to me is he put it out there with that book way before he ever knew he was going to run for office. And he kind of exposed, if you really, that's kind of his poker hand right there in that book, isn't it, Colonel?
Absolutely. In fact, if in the book, the takeaway, at least for me, was, and the real premise there was, how he approaches just about everything in life, how he approaches people, how he approaches business, how he approaches politics. He tells people upfront and honestly what is on his mind. And I think that's the thing that Americans like about him more than anyone else. He doesn't stand up there polished with a script that's going to tell them what they want to hear per se. He's going to tell them how they understand it. He brings it down to their level where they can sit there, whether they've got a high school education or a college education or limited education, everybody understands it at the same level. And I think that's his mastery of how he approaches things. He brings it down to everyone where everybody is comfortable, and people will sit there and say, yeah, I can agree with that. I may not like the way he said it, but the bottom line is what I can get my hands around and understand. And I think that's what he does very well. And people are now anticipating him to do that every day. And that's certainly why he continues tweeting, because he goes over the head of the filtered media and what the media wants you to say right there to the people who want to hear directly from him. And he's doing it very, very superbly, because it's working.
Well, let's touch on that media just a moment, actually. We started at the top of the show here, at the top of the hour, talking about the biggest scandal that seems to have hit Washington potentially in our lifetimes, the Uranium One dossier scandal that is still developing as we speak here. Here's what's most fascinating, is all this is happening here now. You now have a president that was accused of being in bed with Russia all the way through, who kept denying, and of course there was never a piece of evidence there that showed otherwise, but now the cards seem to have turned. The media has been just like beyond my comprehension. I've never seen anything like it, where they are really have become an extension of a political party. They've really become an extension of the DNC. I don't know how else you could put it. A lot of people feel that.
They're not the extension of the DNC. They're ahead of the DNC. The DNC has to rely on the people, and the DNC has lost the people. Hmm. They've lost the votes. They're losing the states. They're losing their elections. Who is it who's running the narrative now? It's the mainstream media. That's who it is. And the colonel made two points. Very, very interesting points, both of them snatched right out of The Art of the Deal. That is, Trump knows his market, mm-hmm. and he knows how to get the word out.
Right.
You combine those two things together, and that is why Trump is successful. His market, you know, he says that, I'm going to quote him, quote, "I like to think that I have that instinct, knowing the market. That's why I don't hire a lot of number crunchers, and I don't trust fancy marketing surveys. I do my own surveys and draw my own conclusions." We know he does that because he knows people.
Yeah,
he knows his market, and he sees the politicians that he's dealing with for exactly what they are, two-faced.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, last thought, Dr. Bev, as we wrap up here, I want to ask you here. With everything George has just put out there and listening to the colonel itself, but here's what I want you to ponder just a moment and give me an honest answer back. Here it is. I don't disagree with what I'm hearing, except this. Here's a man now who's in office. He may have had the support of the people to get to that point, but yet you've got all of these media heads and you've got the entire structure of Washington, Congress, you've got all the politicians, the layers and layers of lobbyists and analysts and nut jobs and everything else up there. So my question is, we talk about a swamp here, far deep and wide. I ask you, can this president, do you believe, pull off what is almost unimaginable at this point, based on the fact that that is the art of a deal, based on the fact that, he, as George says, he puts it out there for people to grasp and understand it? Can he pull this off, or is this too far of a game for even him?
I'm going to take a breath on that, and I'm going to say this. Donald Trump says what people are thinking but are afraid to say it.
Mm-mm-mm.
Dr. Bev made a great point. This is a first, certainly with Donald Trump being in office, where he is driving the media to cover the story the way it should be. So that's probably, in my mind, the most important thing, that he has finally forced them to see it his way, so to speak.
The problem with the mainstream media anyways is that not only are they not really, have not been covering or reporting things throughout the administration, and they've done this for years this way, where their agenda is very blatant. And this is why the rise of a lot of alternative news networks has become so prominent in the nation. And one such alternative news network is indeed America Out Loud. So in this pilot show, Viewpoint This Sunday, we'll bring to you the topics at hand each week and bring to you some honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the aisle. The one thing we don't do on this network and on this show is discriminate against an opinion. We welcome all opinions. The main thing is we are always looking for the out loud truth.